Well, you heard the story, and how is it that David, the young shepherd boy, defeats Goliath, the warrior giant? It's a question that has fascinated folks for thousands of years. Some might say, well, it's just because the story says God's on the side of David's tribe. But if that were all there was, there would not be the need for all the other detail in that story. No, there's a lot more than that kind of a simplistic answer to the question of what's going on in this story. In fact, everyone from theologians to military strategists, from medical doctors to political organizers, have been drawn in by this story and come up with different theories on what happened. So this morning, drawing from all those disciplines and perspectives, I'd like to dig into the story and see what meaning it might have for us. So let's start with a bit of historical context. The story takes place in the region of ancient Palestine known as the Shephelah. It is a beautiful area of high hills and valleys. Today in Israel, there are beautiful forests there. There are vineyards there. It's probably the most beautiful part of Israel. It rises up from the Mediterranean plain. The Philistines, who were great warriors and sailors from Crete, had settled along the coast. And the Israelites, then under the leadership of King Saul, as you heard, were in the mountains. They were arch enemies. And the Philistines one day decided to move up the mountain to capture part of the Israelites' territory and primarily to split the kingdom of the Israelites in two. Saul got word that they were coming up the mountain and assembled his troops and proceeded down the mountain to stop them. Things came to a standstill with the Philistine camped on the southern ridge of the valley of Elah and the Israelites camped on the northern ridge of that same valley. There they each held their positions, looking across the valley at the other. Neither dared advance, as it would have been suicidal to descend down into the valley and try to climb up the hill to attack their enemy. The losses would have been horrific. Finally, the Philistines had had enough of the waiting, and they chose to instigate a life-saving type of combat known in the ancient world as single combat. And that is, each side, in order to avoid massive bloodshed and loss of life, would send out one warrior to represent them in what was essentially a duel, and that result of that duel would be binding on both parties. Well, it's at that point that Michelle picked up with the story. The Philistine giant Goliath calls out to the Israelites, "Send me someone to fight." Soon Goliath, clad in what's estimated at about 125 pounds or more of armor, is being led down into the valley to wait ready for his opponent. So what's this thing about a giant? Well, the biblical text describes his height as 6 cubits and a span. And various sources translating that to modern measurement have come up with different numbers, anywhere from about 6'9" to 9'6". And why is he led down into the valley by someone? And why doesn't he go to attack David rather than tell him to come to fight him? Hear in the story that David's walking towards him with a staff in his hand. And Goliath makes a very strange comment. He says, "Am I a dog that you should come at me with sticks?" Not one stick, but sticks, plural. Well, I mentioned that this story was one even explored by medical science. Experts in the field find something very interesting in this story. It would seem that Goliath very likely suffered from a serious medical condition known as acromegaly, a disease caused by a tumor on the pituitary gland, which in turn causes an overproduction of growth hormone, and of course that would explain Goliath's size. Individuals with this disease have been documented in modern time to reach a height of nearly 9 feet. This disease also has other effects, the most common of which is blurred and multiple vision. That would explain why he's led down into the valley, why he saw multiple sticks when David had only one staff. That would explain why he told David to come to him and fight, and why he didn't seem to be preparing himself for the kind of attack that David would launch. David was a blur. You see, the Israelites saw an intimidating giant, but in the words of Malcolm Gladwell in his recent book, which is titled David and Goliath, the very thing that gave the giant his size was also the source of his greatest weakness. There's an important lesson in that for battles with all kinds of giants, he writes. The powerful and the strong are not always what they seem. Perhaps David wasn't really the underdog at all. You see, Goliath had weaknesses, but his size and power masked those to most people. Surely this is something to consider when facing seemingly all-powerful giants in our own time. Well, military and medical analysis aside, for most people the message or the essential teaching of the story of David and Goliath is that might does not always win. Sometimes the real underdog does. And the words of Malcolm Gladwell again, this story has become a metaphor for improbable victory. Sometimes the powerful are defeated by those who, at least if measured by the same standards, are the powerless. The story of David and Goliath is the story of how ordinary people engage with giants, and not just literal giants, but with challenges or forces in their society that seem so powerful that it's easy to conclude that an ordinary person could not even put a dent in their armor. We've explored the giant side of the equation, noting that perhaps Goliath was really not all he was cracked up to be. But let's look at it from the other side now. What is it that we learn about David that might make this improbable victory possible? First of all, David is courageous. He's willing to take the risk, to step out and meet the challenge and not cower behind others. Angered that no one will step forward to respond to the attack on his people and to the insults hurled at his God by Goliath and the Philistines, he is highly motivated. He steps forward because he feels called to do so and believes that he is on the side of righteousness. But he's a shepherd. What does he know about doing battle of any kind? He has no training as a soldier. And he's going up against not only a giant of great strength, but one who is highly skilled in the use of the weapons of war. Of course, the Israelites, including their king Saul, think this is a crazy idea. They tell him to forget it. But the highly motivated David would not accept their discouragement. Saul has little choice as no one else steps forward, and he says yes to David, but insists he must wear his armor and use his weapons. The king dresses David with the armor and gives him weapons similar to what Goliath has. David at first accepts the armor and the weapons, but then takes them off and puts them down, recognizing that he cannot use them effectively against a master of these weapons. He has no training, no skills with Goliath's kinds of weapons. Instead, he picks up his sling and 5 smooth stones and puts them in his shepherd pouch. 5 smooth stones in the hand of a frail shepherd boy to kill a heavily armed giant. The Israelites must have been thinking, this is not going to turn out well. Surely this guy David is crazy. He doesn't know what he's doing. But he does. His motivation has engaged his creative thinking. He thinks about the battle differently. He has no intent to engage in traditional combat with Goliath. Instead, he conceives of a plan based on 5 stones. These are tools which he has done battle with lions and bears that have attacked his sheep. And he's skilled in their use. Had David gone into battle in the armor and with the traditional weapons of war, surely Goliath would have quickly destroyed him. He knew that. His motivation enhanced his creative thinking. And he applied that knowledge and skill that he had to defeat the giant. He met the challenge, solved the problem, based on the wisdom of his own life experience. He found the resources that others did not see and could not apply to the situation. I think it's a brilliant story, and one that has great lessons to teach. Throughout history, there have been Davids who triumphed over Goliaths. A few years ago, when my partner Malcolm and I were driving from Switzerland to France, we stopped in the little Huguenot village of Le Chambon-sur-Lyon. Here was a place where another David engaged with a horrible giant. That giant was the Vichy government of occupied France and the Nazi Gestapos. Vichy is only a few miles down the road from Le Chambon. The story of this village is captured in the book Lest Innocent Blood Be Shed by Philip Haley, which I've referred to in the past. The town's minister, Andre Trocmé, was a courageous man who preached the equal worth and dignity of every individual. Sound familiar? And could not stand idle as the Nazis were exterminating the Jews. He was highly motivated to do whatever he could to save Jewish lives, especially the lives of Jewish children. But he knew that direct confrontation with Nazis would not save any Jews. So instead, he, with other villagers, engaged in a very creative strategic plan. He and his villagers, through careful planning, moved thousands of Jews, mainly children, through this village and onto safety without detection by the ever-present Nazis. Many in the town were involved, but they never spoke to each other about it. There were those who made shoes and clothes for the children, those who fed and sheltered them. You see, there was a boarding school in the town. What the Nazis never noticed was that the children always changed. The rescued children would be given school clothes and placed in the school until they could be safely transported at night to Switzerland and other children came in. Life continued in the village without any acknowledgement that anything out of the ordinary was going on. The result of this minister and the few villagers' efforts was that nearly 5,000 children were saved. David prevailed over Goliath. Marshall Gantz, a professor at Harvard's Kennedy School, who recently published a book from which I stole the title of the sermon. By the way, sermon titles and book titles are not copyrightable, just in case you need to know that. He calls his book, Why David Sometimes Wins, Leadership, Organization, and Strategy in the California Farm Workers Movement. And he was a principal speaker at a recent conference of Unitarian Universalist ministers. Gantz, the son of a rabbi, who was taught at a very young age by his parents that oppression of any group of people was wrong, became involved in the civil rights movement in this country and later joined Cesar Chavez at the very beginning of the United Farm Workers Movement and worked with him for 16 years. What he witnessed in doing that was a group of powerless and mistreated people go up against the giants of the California wine industry and win. Gantz explained how they did that successfully. For decades, attempts had been made to try and improve salary and benefits and working conditions for migrant farm workers. There were some small, very small successes, but even the big union organizations like the AFL-CIO were not successful in gaining any major victories. But then a small group, led by the workers and their families, started a boycott of first one wine company and then another. And they were deeply inspired by their faith. They began a 300-mile march to the California State House. They carried with them a large wooden cross, a banner of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It was not the traditional union against management kind of fight or march. It was something deeper. These were the true poor and powerless, but they had the courage of their conviction and they were truly motivated. They also did not go about this in the traditional ways that labor unions usually do. Their leaders, Chavez, principal among them, were not trying to be the counterpart in negotiation with the wine company owners. They believed justice was on their side. And they used their creative resources and a group of adaptive, truly creative strategies, strategies that they were comfortable with to use as their tools in fighting this battle, and not strategies that their opponent would use. In Gantz's words, the United Farm Workers were able to get the long list of migrant worker rights that the larger unions were not, because The motivation of its leaders was greater than that of their rivals. They had better access to salient knowledge, and their deliberations became venues for learning. That's to say they were creative. They didn't try to engage with their opponent on their opponent's terms or by the old ways of doing things. They used the tools they knew to fight the battle, their own wisdom. They were unorthodox in their approach, and they were courageous, took risks, and were highly motivated. This is the story of David and Goliath again. So what about in our time? I think it's easy for us to think that the money of the powerful control everything. That in our world today, with an increasing concentration of power and wealth, where money and special interests seem to completely control the political process, we have become cynical, believing the little guy doesn't have a chance. But sometimes the powerful are defeated by those who, at least if measured by the same standards of the giants, are the powerless. That was the story back in the civil rights movements when Rosa Parks did not pick up a gun but sat down on a bus. It has been the story of the gay rights movement where courageous men and women simply came out of the shadows and everyone realized it was their brother or sister or their neighbor that they were persecuting. It's not a militant fight that finally is leading to equal marriage, but loving partners and families with beautiful children who share their stories and are thereby winning the battles against the Goliaths of conservative religion. It was the story of those who did not confront the Nazis directly, but quietly taught Jewish children in the school by day and led them to safety through the mountains at night. They're all the stories of highly motivated and very courageous people who did not fight the battle on the terms of their much more powerful opponents. So where's the hope today? Where will it happen next? The stories of David and Goliath are written in every generation. I don't know, but maybe the 11 million undocumented folks who contribute so much to our country and are totally ignored will just stop doing their jobs one day, and those who oppose fair immigration policies will have to give in to the reasonable demands they make. Maybe the average citizen, who polls show have lost all faith in their government because of the influence of wealth and special interests, maybe they'll rise up and force an amendment to our Constitution to get money out of politics. You know, we see more oppression of women in the world today all the time. But at the same time, I sense and we see some examples of oppressed women who are finding the courage to claim equality, maybe by driving a car in Saudi Arabia, or maybe by just going to school in Pakistan or Afghanistan. There are too many Goliaths out there, but there are also lots of courageous, motivated Davids who have the capacity to think about the battle differently, who have a wisdom that's based on their own experience that can be mightier than the weapons of the most powerful. It's an ancient story, but one retold in every generation. We pray for all the Davids of our time who are stepping up to the Goliaths with courage, with justice and right on their side, and with the unique wisdom of their own experience.